All right. When I was 15, maybe 16, we were living in Paraguay at the time. And one of the things you did in Paraguay was go alligator hunting. Caimans. We went hunting for caimans. And when you would go gator hunting, you would go at nighttime. And you'd have the truck and you'd shine the lights on the pond and you'd see the eyes of the gators. And you would pick one and you'd shoot one. And so we went, me and my dad, my uncle and his two sons. We had gone out at the ranch. And so we came up to the pond and you could see them swimming around. Shone the lights on. This was the middle of the night sometime. And my dad lined one up with the gun and he shot. And when he shot, there was a big kersplash as all the other ones dove underwater. There was, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 in the pond. I'm not sure. But they all dove under. And the one that my dad shot was still floating. And it's like, I think we got him. Like, he's dead. And he's just floating. He's way on the other side of the pond. And my uncle says to his sons, boys, go in there and go get him. And they said, no, I don't think so. And then my dad looked at me and said, Chad, go in there and get the alligator. I said, yes, sir. And I took off my shoes. I had a stick about that big. I was going to poke it to make sure it was dead. I had my little stick. And then into the pond I went. The water went about to here. I had to cross way over in the dark. Right? And I got all the way over there and I leaned forward and I poked to see if it was dead. And it wasn't an alligator at all. Out of all the ones that my dad shot, he had shot a pile of dirt that was just sticking up under the water. All the rest were real alligators, but that one was not. And I'm like, that's a pile of dirt. And so I kept my stick in case I had to fight any alligator off on the way back. And then I went walking back and I got out of the pond. The next day, I told my mom what we had done, because I thought I had been very brave going in the pond with the gators. So I told my mom and I said, that was kind of dangerous. And she goes, no, I don't think so. I'm like, Mom, like, did you hear what I just said? And she goes, yeah, they're just ducks. I'm like, they're not ducks, Mom. They're yacaré, alligators. And she goes, where's your father? She thought we had gone duck hunting for some reason. But it wasn't ducks. It was alligators. And when she found out that Dad had sent me into the pond after the gator, well, I never found out what that conversation was like between my mom and my dad. I don't know what happened there, but she was really, really mad. I remember how upset she was. Now, at the time when Dad sent me in there, I didn't think it was very wise. After all these years, I still hold to my position. I don't think that was very wise at all. But the point is, of that little story, men in particular need to know how and when to take risks. And sometimes that means you are going to go over the line a little bit. Men have to learn how to do that. And sons need to learn that skill. If they're going to grow up to be leaders, providers, protectors, boys need to learn how to get hurt and how to get back up. If boys never get hurt, they never get strong. And it can be a great temptation for mothers in particular to protect their sons from getting hurt. And the result is, or it can be, that those sons end up growing up to be afraid of the world, to be afraid of getting hurt. So women need to learn how to raise their sons to be men. You must not let fear be your guide on how you raise your sons. We need to let God's definition of manhood be our guide in raising our son. So if you are a mama bear and you have sons, this really, really matters. But it matters for all of us in the sisterhood as we walk together and encourage one another. If you don't have sons or you don't have children or you're not married, it still matters to know what is going on in our church life, what our goals are before the Lord, what he has asked us to do and to be. So this is for all of us. We can all learn from this. And as I said to the men last week, we talked about raising sons as well. In that situation, we were a room full of men. And so as men, we have to learn how to do this too. If we're going to raise our sons to be this, we have to know what this is. So it is for everybody. So we're going to talk today about raising sons, or to put it in a better way, raising men. And since we are women here today, this is really important because you are not a man. Amen? And since you are not a man, you should not be trying to make your sons to be like you. And that is a challenge for loving mothers everywhere. That is really hard. A few verses from the book of Proverbs. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish man despises his mother. A foolish son is a grief to his father and a bitterness to her who bore him. In the book of Proverbs, the difference between a foolish son and a wise one is the instruction that he receives, right from Proverbs chapter 1. The instruction that he receives is going to make him to a wise son or a foolish one. It doesn't just happen on accident. Wise and good sons don't just appear out of nowhere. They need training. And that means that your son, our sons, are to be trained to be men of God. They are not to become women of God. They are not to be a person of God. They are to be a man of God. And God has told us in his word what men are. So we are to train them to be them. And if he is not trained to be a man, the son ends up being foolish and will bring his mother to bitterness and sorrow. So the question is, do you know what you're trying to do with your sons? What's the goal? Are you just trying to get little Jimmy to sit still at the table? Is that the goal? Or are you trying to train Jimmy to be a man who stands faithful in his own generation, raising his family well? Those are pretty different goals, aren't they? Often, all that we're trying to do is just get him to sit still, right? That's the struggle of the moment. How can we do that? But we can get stuck there and lose sight of the greater goal. We need to know what it is that we're supposed to be doing. Discipline of our children, and here for our sons, next time we want to talk about daughters, discipline is not just for the immediate results. Discipline aims for the results that are going to last a lifetime. Discipline has an end goal, not just in the moment, but a larger goal of life. And if you end up focusing just on the immediate, you might teach him not to touch the hot stove, but you're never going to teach him how to handle a hot stove. He also has to learn how to handle a hot stove. Perhaps they do learn to sit still in church. That's good. They should. But are they also learning to love the church at the same time? What's your goal? What are you turning him into? A disciplined son who knows how to sit still for an hour? Or a disciplined son who loves the church and is a leader and a pillar in his generation? So there's a much bigger goal. So discipline teaches. It doesn't just rebuke. Discipline will challenge. It doesn't just protect. It builds up, doesn't tear down. We are supposed to be building something with our sons. Too many times, or very often, the thing that the sons hear most from mom is be careful. Be careful. Be careful. And what we should learn to be saying more of is be aware. Son, know your surroundings. Know what you do, how it is affecting people around you. Know what the risks are. Know how to master your environment. You are going to be a leader one day. And you need to learn how to be aware of your surroundings. Be aware, son. Don't be afraid of your surroundings. Master them. Don't always be careful. Be aware. If all your son ever hears is be careful, what he's going to learn is be afraid. There's always a threat lurking that I'm not able to handle. The worst possible thing that can happen to me is I'm going to get hurt. Mom always says, be careful, be careful, be careful, be careful. There's always a threat. And the one thing that I have to avoid is getting hurt. There's things out there that are stronger than me. And he learns fear. But if on the other hand, he hears, be aware, son. Master your surroundings. Where's the danger? Where's the threat? Be aware. How can you overcome? All that. He's going to learn wisdom. He's going to learn the limits and the capabilities of his strength. He's going to learn courage. And along with all of that, he will learn to be careful. He will learn. That same lesson you want him to learn, he's going to learn it. But you're going to have to teach him to be aware. Teach him his strength. So we need to teach our sons not to be afraid, but to be brave, because that's what they're for. So what are sons for? This is where we need to keep our focus on through the day-to-day struggles of parenting, as you're disciplining and training and teaching. I'm going to give you three things that sons are for. We just had daughters, four daughters. I can tell you, the lessons of what sons are for really, really matter to me, even though I didn't have sons. I had daughters who are interested in these boys. And I care very much what those sons are being raised as. This matters to all of us. So three things that are guiding principles to help you in your training. Keep these in mind. It'll help you help your son become a man. Now, I hope that by now, over these months, we have established that men and women have purpose in life. God has created them for something. We're not free to do whatever we want. We talked last time a little bit about gendered piety. God has made genders, and with those genders, he has expectations. There's a reason why he didn't fill the world with just women. He made men as well, and there's a reason for that. He didn't make just one gender, he made two. And so there's expectations that come along. Each gender, even though there's a pile of overlap, they have purposes that are distinct from one another. We are different. And we are responsible to pursue our God-given purpose. And we're responsible to train our children in the way that they should go. So, the first thing that sons are for. You keep this in mind when you're training and disciplining your boys. Sons are for strength. Proverbs 20:29. It says that the glory of young men is their strength. So when Paul says in Corinthians to act like men, he is telling the men to build their strength, develop their strength, act like men. And the glory of men is their strength. So boys are for strength. It is their glory. It is a prize that God has given them. It is not to be shut down or to be seen as a shameful thing. It is their glory. Our young men should be strong. That's physical strength. That's mental fortitude. That's spiritual conviction. And above all, it's learning self-control. Young men are supposed to be strong. Now, we have this instruction all over Scripture. Self-control for the young men that comes up in a number of places. And we have that because of all things, young men don't know how to use the strength that they have. They don't know how strong they are and how much damage they can cause. They have no idea. And they need to be trained. So I have a number of copies of a book, Thoughts for Young Men by J.C. Ryle. Wonderful book. I often will hand it out for young men to read. And in the opening chapter, he talks about, why do I think this is important to address the young man? Like, what am I doing here? And so this is a bit of a paraphrase, but he says stuff like this. Who are the ones in society most likely to rebel against authority? It's the young men. Who are most likely to roll their eyes and be bored with biblical instruction? The young men. Who takes most delight in wrecking things? Well, it's usually the young men. Most of the people sitting in jail, who are they? Young men. Who sits in the drunk tank the most? That's mostly the young men. Who are most likely to spend all their time on video games and watching sports? The young men. Who are the hardest to reach with the call to responsibility? The young men. And he says, count on it. Young men are called to strength, and everywhere we see them enslaved. Enslaved to whatever is cool, to their own desires and passions, whatever gets them status with their friends, enslaved to these things, and they are most likely to throw away the things of the Lord. Did I tell you the story about the baggy pants fashion? Did I say that? Not sure. I had read this years ago. It was a bunch of executives of a clothing line, and they were like, what's going to be the hot new fashion we're dressing the young men? What's going to be? What are we going to get them with? And someone in the boardroom says, young men really love to tick off their parents. They like that. So what we ought to do is find something that makes parents angry, and we market that to the young men. That's going to sell. And they're like, you know what? That's brilliant. That's going to work. And so they came up with that fashion design of those baggy pants that hang all the way down, right? They came up with those. The most ridiculous thing ever. They said, parents are going to hate it. They're absolutely going to despise that. It's the worst thing ever. Let's try it. And that just took off, right? It was huge. And the young men loved it because it annoyed the establishment. Now, I worked with a guy who wore his pants like that, young guy. And, excuse me, and I had read that article, and I told him that. I said, this is what's happened. I said, man, you have been played. Like, they've taken your money, boy. Like, you are just, right, you've totally gotten played. And he sat there with his pants down by his ankles, and he thought about it. Best fashion ever, he said. And it didn't change his mind at all, because his dad really hated it. Young men need discipline. They need training. They need a call to come up higher. And the world's going to tell them to fool around, do what you want, have fun. So when that young man hears the call to take responsibility, he's not really interested. They don't crave that responsibility. They crave fun. And when the church offers them discipleship, they often drift off looking for fun, which leads to weak men. And weak men end up deeply afraid, very angry, insecure, and dependent on others, the opposite of masculinity. So what's the answer? Teach them their glory. Teach them what they're made for. God gave them a great strength. Teach them to be strong. Our sons need to learn what they are for. They need to learn to love their strength, which means they are going to learn to love responsibility. When we teach the boys to be strong, that means they're not going to be boys for long. They will crave manhood and what men they will be. Boys need to be encouraged to use their strength. And when they are not, then they will remain boys. Boys should be taught to work hard, to respect girls, to respect authority, to love the church, to love the things of the Lord, to use their strength to protect the weak, to grow in wisdom before the Lord, to be brave, how to take dominion in the world. If all you ever say is be careful, how will he learn any of those things? Teach them their strength. Boys are meant to grow up to be dragon slayers and know how to engage the enemy and win. They need to be taught their strength. It's their glory. And boys want to do great things in their life. They absolutely do. We must teach them that that's a good desire. If all we want from our sons is that they go to bed on time, we're missing out on what they are made for. Remember what he is for. So when your son becomes a man, what should he know? The first thing he should know is how strong he is. He should know how strong he is and what that strength is for. So moms, don't rob your son of this knowledge by teaching him inadvertently that he is weak, always saying, be careful. Before the Lord, that young man should love his strength. He doesn't need to be ashamed of it. He needs wisdom to govern it. When we have the right goal in our mind, we can start to teach and train and discipline for that larger goal of what God has for our sons and for the future. They need to be taught how strong they are, their strength. That's what they are for. Second thing that sons are for, marriage and children. As part of what they are for. And we learned that right in the beginning. God said, it's not good for man to be alone. It's not good. It's not good. Man was never intended to be alone. God has made a helper fit for him, the woman. And they fit together, a man and a woman. Therefore, a man is for marriage. That's part of his purpose. That's what sons are for, which means they are also for children. The purpose of maleness and masculinity is for marriage and children. We must teach our sons to love this, to love it, to want it. The world certainly does not teach the young men that at all. Boys need to learn the goodness of marriage. And we live in this hyper-sexualized world. We're inundated with sexual imagery wherever we go. Immodesty has become a virtue in our society. Promiscuity is encouraged. The family is made fun of. The world hates monogamy, hates family. It hates the honorable man. And our sons need to learn to reject the world outright, learn how to love their wives, to rejoice in the one woman. They need to know how to pursue her, to be men of honor. They are strong, and they are for strength, and they're for marriage, which means they're for one. And they need to learn to love that. Who will teach him? He needs to learn to control himself and live with his wife in an honorable way. Our sons need to learn how to treat women in general. They need to learn proper decorum around women. They need to learn how to keep the marriage bed pure. And then coming out of that, we need to teach our sons to love children, to anticipate being fathers. Remember, that's what sons are for. That's why they are strong. That's why they've been given their masculinity. God intends for men to take responsibility for others, for their families, to use their strength to build godly households. That's what sons are for, what their strength is for. And we need to teach them to love those things, to pursue them. The world makes fun of such notions, right? They say men should be soft like women, which is degrading to a man. That's effeminate. What is beautiful on a woman is really ugly in a man. They must not be effeminate. And if they embrace that teaching, they end up not taking responsibility for others. They avoid having children. They pursue their own selfish desires. Young men pursue their own selfish desires. And at that point, when they do get married, that's why they do it. For their own selfish desires, which leads to really miserable wives and children. If a young man has just been taught, and what he has learned is to pursue his own selfishness, that's what matters in life, and then he decides to take a wife at some point, that's going to be his guiding light. Whatever pleases me. That's how I've been taught. That's what I've learned. I'm going to take a wife, and I want my pleasures to be met and my needs to be met. And they don't know how to sacrifice. They don't know how to suffer. They don't know how to work, provide, protect, and all of that, which makes for really difficult households. And those men get angry or they pout, hide away somewhere, and often leave the marriage entirely. When a marriage is based on a self-centered desire for having one's own desires met, it's going to be a miserable marriage. So moms, teach your sons to be strong, to use their strength for the purpose of taking responsibility for themselves and for other people. That's why they have the strength. Not to gather everything for themselves, to do everything that they want in life. They have been given strength to build into other people and to help bear those burdens, to provide for a wife and children. That's why that strength was given to them, not for their own pleasures, at least not solely. So teach them to be strong, take responsibility, teach them what it means to be a man, teach them to be aware of what their strength is doing to others and how to use it correctly. Their future marriage is really at stake. We need to teach our sons what they're for. And one of the things that they are for is marriage and children. And even though, of course, not everyone marries, we don't live in a perfect world that all happens every single time. Nevertheless, the truth of what God has intended for mankind remains. The exceptions do not nullify the rule. Sons are for marriage and children. And we all have our own stories. Some get married young and some don't get married at all. I read just recently of there's a pastor who had been walking with a young lady who had wanted so badly to get married. And they had just walked in discipleship and for so long, and she never did. And they ended up moving away. And he said, I just got a letter from her in the mail the other day asking if I would come to her wedding. She's 50 years old, and she's getting married. And she had to wait a very long time. It's not always a fairy tale story, but that doesn't change what God has intended for men. Third thing, sons are for. I'm just going to put glory. Sons are for glory. They are the bearers of the glory of God in a particular way. So in 1 Corinthians 11, Paul says that men, meaning literal men, not mankind, in this context, he's talking about men. Men are the glory of God, right? In that same passage, he talks about women being the glory of men, right? So he's talking about men in particular. They are to be the glory bearers of God. They are to reflect God in their masculinity. They are to mirror his image that has been given to all mankind, but they are to do it in a masculine way. They are to be his representatives on earth in their masculinity. So God says to call him a father. God said, that's what you call me. You call me a father. And men, you are to be that glory on earth. You are to be a father. You are to show your family what fatherhood is like. And through that, your family will understand what the Heavenly Father is like. Men are to reflect that glory. So they are for marriage and children. And in the context of marriage and children, they reflect the glory of the Father in their masculinity. So you see that in two main areas. One is in being husbands. That's where they reflect the masculinity of Christ, because Christ is the husband of the bride. So God has made men. He has created marriage. And he said, that is a picture of my love for the church. So men, you are for marriage. And in that marriage, you are supposed to reflect Christ's love. You reflect this glory. And then in children, same thing. God is the Father. Men, I have made you to be fathers. So in your husbandry and in your fatherhood, you are to reflect the glory of God so that your people understand a bit more of what the Heavenly Father is like, of what the bridegroom is like. Now, all of this means that what men do with their lives really matters. They must be taught, our sons must be taught, that in their manhood, they are always proclaiming something about God. Whether they are correct or incorrect, they are proclaiming something. They are men. So our sons need to be taught that they are proclaiming something about God. They need to know who their God is. They need to know that they are glory bearers of God. They are to reflect Him, being taught how to live. So our sons need to be taught to love their families, to love the church, to love God's people, to love the word, to love prayer, to love the Lord with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the wise son becomes wise through this teaching. And the parents have been called to do this teaching. Our sons need to be taught the gospel, to be trained in righteousness. So are we developing a passion in our young men for the things of God? Do they get stirred up by the things of God? Have they been taught? That doesn't come naturally. Invite the young men to a prayer meeting. You got a battle on your hands more often than not. It's hard. Do they love the things of the Lord? Do they desire to walk in holiness? Do they crave that? Or do they desire whatever is cool? Even to the point of wearing baggy pants, which is just weird, isn't it? Best fashion ever, he thought. Do our young men want to reflect God, or do they want to look like everyone else? But Mom, I just want to be different like everyone else. Right? That's the phrase. Men blare the glory of God in their masculinity, and our sons need to learn what it looks like in the life of a man. So we are called up to raise the next generation. We're not just looking for an immediate result in the moment, although we do that. You should learn to sit still. That's good. But we are also thinking we are raising up the next generation of men. And what are men? Men are the dragon slayers, the churchmen, the builders, husbands and fathers. Men who know that it is their birthright to take dominion in the name of God. God has intent for men. He doesn't just place them here on earth with no purpose, with no direction, with nothing to be or to do. God did not put them here so they could just go and amuse themselves with their own desires. They have a reason to be here. There's a purpose for them. And they need to be trained. Trained what to pursue and how to pursue it. So God has given men a purpose, and your job as a mother is to help them understand that purpose, to love it, to desire it, to accomplish it. Your goal should be big. You want to help that young man understand what he is for and to love it, that he wants those things in his life, that he strives for them. Learn to think in those goals. This is what you're trying to build. We need to teach our sons what they are for. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. We are to actively train for the future, shaping our sons into those warriors, husbands and fathers, glory bearers. And a faithful mother will know these things, and she pursues them. When I was maybe 11 or 12, I had a bunch of little monster trucks, little Hot Wheels. I still have them up in the loft. After all these years, little monster trucks, right? The girls know. And I would spend hours and hours playing with those little monster trucks. And I would make little tracks and ramps and see which one was the fastest and which one was the best. And I always thought, I'm going to be such a good driver one day because I can just go around the corner so fast. One day, when I was 11 or 12, my dad comes to me and says, Chad, get the keys to my truck. And you have to park it on the other side of the driveway. It's blocking your mom's car. And he just left. I had never driven before. No one had ever taught me anything. I knew absolutely nothing whatsoever. And Dad just dropped that bomb on me, and he went back to his living room chair, and he sat down and turned on the TV. My heart's just pop, 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 pop. Like, this is Dad's truck. I'm going to drive it. And I don't know how to drive it. Right? So I went and got the keys. I was so nervous. I got in the truck. Like, okay, I've seen him do it. Like, I didn't know anything about it, but I had seen. So I started. It's like, it's running. Right? I'm like, okay, so far so good. Now, his truck was here. My mom's car was there. I had to back up, turn the wheels, and pull in beside mom so she could get out to go shopping or something. Okay, so I put it in reverse. I got that right. Backed it up. Like, okay, I'm doing good. I put it in drive, and I turned, and I started to turn, but I didn't turn far enough. And I pulled up beside my mom's car, and it was just... And then they were stuck together. And I was in an utter panic. So I said, I got to get out of here. So I put it in reverse and just back the other way. He's like, it's not working. Maybe if I go forward one more time. It went forward again. It went a couple of inches, and they were just bound together. Just, and it was not budging at all. They were absolutely jammed. I thought that was the day I was going to die. I was going to die by my father's own hand. I had to go now go tell him what I had done. And I thought I was so doomed. It was so bad. I still remember how scared I was. And much to my surprise, my dad wasn't mad at all. Nothing. He completely and utterly let it go. He said, you know what? That's my fault. I didn't train you. That's on me. I'll take that one. When you're older, I'll teach you how to drive. And him and my brothers went out there, and they kind of just jumped the truck over a little bit so they got it loose. Just kind of jumped it over, kind of bounced it up and down. Both the truck and the car were just scraped all the way down the side. And he completely let it go. Not another word was said. He goes, that's on me. Don't worry about it. Now, he could have totally crushed me that day, right? He took a chance on me. I messed it up pretty bad. I did not do well whatsoever. And he didn't shame me for it at all. He didn't shame me. That's one of the best memories I have of him. He could have, but he didn't. He let me try, and then he took responsibility for my mistake, and he taught me to be better. That was amazing. He taught me not to be afraid. He taught me not to be ashamed. And a few years later, he did teach me how to drive. And I remember putting the fear into him with a few of the things that I did on the road as I was learning. But he let me try. And he taught me. I am a good driver, I think. I'm so thankful for what he did that day. It could have gone the other way. We need to teach, not just scold. To provide room to fail, to take risks. And when we do fail, we must not shame our sons for it. Teach them their glory. Teach them to be aware. Teach them to be better. When they mess up, you got to tell them. Don't lie to them. Tell them when they've got it wrong. Absolutely. Teach them to be better. Don't shame them. If there's one thing that a man fears, it's being shamed above all else. Sons need room to use their strength, and a good mother is going to give them those opportunities. A son who never learns how to fail is never going to learn how to succeed either. He's going to lack the skills, and he's going to lack the courage, never having had a chance to practice and develop his own skill and strength. So we must not always say, be careful. We say, be aware. So mothers, do not discourage your sons. Teach them how to succeed. Teach them how to fail. Teach them how to be dangerous and self-controlled at the same time. They need both. They are to respect your homes. Lord willing, they will be the head of one day. So teach them how to respect the home. Teach them how to respect their mother. One day, they may be the head of their own home, and what you teach them is going to have effect there. Teach them to love their strength, how to take risks, when to do it. Teach them wisdom. In Proverbs 31, King Lemuel there talks about what his mother taught him. The first part of Proverbs 31. The words of his mother to her son. And she says three things in that passage. She tells him, don't be a drunk. Don't be a drunk. Don't give your strength to women. And then seek justice. That is the wisdom of the mother. She teaches her son, you're going to be a leader. Don't give your strength to women. You are to lead. You are to lead. Be strong. She's going to teach her son self-control. Don't be a drunk son. Don't run to the pleasures of this world every time something goes wrong. Don't run. Don't run. You are a leader. You be strong. You learn self-control. In that context, don't be a drunk. And she tells him, take care of your people. See that justice is done. There are those around you that are weak and that are struggling. And she tells him, take care of them. That's what your strength is for. Son, you're going to lead. You're going to do it in self-control. And you're going to take care of those around you that God has given you to take care of. And a wise mother is going to know what her son is for. And in so doing, they will become men. And what men they will be.